It is time for Community Matters, brought to you by the First National Bank of Beloit, Mitchell County Hospital Health Systems. Our guest today is the city administrator of Beloit, Jason Raby, who's soon to be the city manager. You already got a promotion, for crying out loud. You only been here about 3 months. You're doing a good job.
Yeah, I know. I worked that out just right.
Yeah, so that was good timing. I'm sure there's this huge pay hike and raise for you just by the change of titles, right?
Yep, exactly. You know, it's like zero pay raise with more responsibility. But no, I kind of knew that going in, so I'm excited that it happened. And I think it'll be a good move for the city.
Well, tell everybody a little bit about yourself. We don't need everything from when you were born, but what you can tell us the Cliff Notes version.
Yeah, sure. I mean, kind of recap. I born in Indiana, farming. My dad was a farmer, worked for John Deere, and then moved over to Case International. So then we obviously followed him as a family and moved to southern Minnesota. And that's pretty much the bulk of where I grew up, again, in the farming area. And the first part of my career after college, I worked up in Iowa, up by the Cedar Rapids area, about 10 years in banking. And then concurrently with that, I was a mayor of one of the faster growing communities in Iowa. And so that's where I really developed my interest in municipal government and management. And so Beloit's kind of my first stop in that arena. So kind of melding my public sector management experience and my private sector management experience into Beloit, and hopefully I can help facilitate, make great things happen. So,
what stood out to you? Why was Beloit appealing to you, and why did you apply for the position?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, obviously, there's certain positions open, but my criteria going into it is I wanted it to be a Midwest or farming-based community. That's what I'm familiar with, mm-hmm. that smaller town feel, and being able to get to know people. A county seat was also a big criteria for me. Being able to be that hub of for the spokes and kind of being the flagship, hopefully, of that county. And then some bonuses that really attracted me to Beloit once I was able to visit it and bring my wife along was just the people, how they were so involved, and how Beloit had really, the citizens had made a lot of efforts to make Beloit a great place to live, having a hospital there, the school district, the technical college, all those things are huge assets for a community the size of Beloit that aren't necessarily common in a lot of Midwestern communities. So once I saw all those resources and saw how much people cared and were involved in working to make Beloit a great place, that kind of sealed the deal for me. And then I was just hoping that they'd offer me the position. So
the previous stop you had, how big a town was that?
We were about 2,500 people at that point, but we had grown from about 800 people in the year 2000, and I would suspect that the 2020 census, we'll probably be clearing 3,000 people or more, and we had just, we're in the process of getting a bunch of expansion done so we could annex in about a square mile, and that would all be houses. Mm-hmm. And so being next to a urban market, it'd be similar to like a Topeka or Wichita is what we were next to. It drove a lot of that. So that really gave me a lot of experience in putting in projects, designing them, whether it's infrastructure or parks or trails. I mean, all that stuff I've been able to help build and facilitate a lot of that. So hopefully bringing that experience to Beloit and those tricks of the trade, if you will, can help on those future projects.
Jason Raby, he's the new city administrator of Beloit. He's our guest today on Community Matters, brought to you by the First National Bank of Beloit, Mitchell County Hospital Health System. So your family excited to come here? You and I were talking about this before we went on the air, that as you get older, and some people use a really bad term, and I can't stand the term, and that is baggage. That's not baggage, okay? Your kids and your wife and your family, that's not baggage. That's the core of what probably why you exist, for crying out loud. But how did they go about with the move? Because it's never easy to move from one spot to another.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. Thankfully, my kids are a little bit younger on the spectrum so far. I got an 8-year-old, 6-year-old, and a 3-year-old. So it's a disruption, but it's a little bit less so. You get them here. I knew once I got them here, they'd make new friends, get involved with school, and it would kind of fade a little bit in the memory. But obviously, it's always tough. You move away from grandma or changing friends and that kind of thing. But the best part, being here in Beloit, and it's been awesome, is just the outreach of citizens here and people, constantly bringing food by or
That's why I've gained some weight.
Yeah, me too. Mm-hmm. Yep. Some news, hey, your newspaper and a clipping for you. And, mm-hmm. and so just a lot of thoughtfulness and been able to make a lot of great new friends and kind of connect. And that's really my method of operation in every position I've been in, is just to really get to know the community and know people, because that really helps when you have to make those those tougher decisions, or we've got bigger, more complex issues that we're trying to solve, that, you know, we can, I have that relationship built with people and with citizens to help, you know, get ideas off of or tweak it or sell it to.
Right.
So, yeah.
Well, I think that the one thing that was encouraging to me when you were hired, and I hadn't met you, I didn't know anything about you, and then you were hired, was that I heard that you had a family. And to me, when you're in a position that you're in to have a family and young children, so hopefully they grow up here and be here forever, but, well, maybe not. You want kids to go to college, maybe not forever.
Yeah,
you
not, wanna, for, you know, not on the payroll forever.
Yeah, let me make that
careful
clear.
That.
Yeah, exactly. But it means that you're invested. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it means that you're invested in the community and you understand that, hey, this affects my kids. I can relate to something that affects the future generations of Beloit or the community, whatever the case may be. And I think that's really important. And I think that was one of the things that it sounded like to me from I talked to various officials is that that was something they were looking for in an applicant, weren't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. And I think that kind of going back to my point and what the point you're making is that, you know, if I'm right beside people, you know, the decisions that I help make or I have a different perspective, you know, and I can think, hey, this affects me as well. It doesn't mean it does. I should. Oh, so how do I serve myself? But it lets me know. It puts me in their seat as well. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think being disconnected from that would be really hard to say. How does this affect Beloit if you're not even involved or in the community? And so you know, I think that's important to me. And that's just the way we operate, anyways. My wife and I, we like getting to know people and getting involved and contributing to the community, whether I was in this position or not.
Right.
That'd just be what I'd do with any community.
Well, that's great. All right. So tell us the difference between city administrator, which you are now, and soon to be city manager, which that was decided at the recent election. Explain the differences and what different responsibilities or added responsibilities you have.
Sure. Yeah. There's not a significant difference. You know, my day is not going to feel a lot different. I think really what it does is it clearly delineates the management structure of the community. So I think the council and the mayor, you know, and probably for a significant amount of time, has said, hey, we really want the city administrator to run the community and to make those decisions and to have the power to do that. But what this will do is actually give me those resources to do that. And it doesn't mean I still have to answer to the mayor, to the council. You know, if I'm not doing a good job, they can let me go at any time. But it basically it keeps it clears what their role is in the decision making process, and that's really, you know, setting the policy, approving the budget, approving things beyond my scope, and really being the check and balance to myself.
Right.
You know, they're going to still see the expenditures, they're still going to see the decisions. I'm still going to keep them in the loop because, again, if I'm going to go and ask them for more, a new project or for approval for something, I need to still have that relationship built. But then as far as managing the employees and the day-to-day operations and all the department heads, then that fully falls under my umbrella now. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important because instead of having, you know, is it me or is it me and the council or whatever it is, as you can imagine, in a sticky situation, that can make it a difficult management situation. So that's primarily probably the biggest change, and I think the biggest benefit to this is if you're paying me good money to be here, manage your staff and your community and the day-to-day operations of it, then, you know, now I have the full suite of tools to do that for you. So
I would imagine, since you're the new guy, and trust me, I was a new guy at one point too, and eventually that will wear off, that people will be coming up to you, and they probably already have, and they've given you lots of different suggestions or ideas on how to run the city or what to do differently, this or that. Is that true?
Yeah, I mean, everybody has their opinion, and that's part of why I really always work to just sit back and absorb things. Mm-hmm. I don't want to move really quick, say, hey, we're going to do X, Y, Z. I like to really kind of let it percolate because it starts forming in my mind of how do I want to approach this? You know, who are the players? You know, what do the citizens feel? And a lot of it is anecdotal. You hear of you know, processes that you do or how people work or whatever, and you try to take that all in, but you really try to balance it with what you know and can see and what you're being told. And so I appreciate, in fact, I was thinking about that the last couple of days in our upcoming discussion, is, you know, some of my best, air quotes here on air here, you know, some of my best ideas have been from citizens, you know, my previous community. And yeah, I might massage it. I might put it within the boundaries of what we can do as a city. But in my previous community, for sure, I mean, you know, whether it was a trail or infrastructure project or, you know, a policing or security issue, you know, citizens would say, why don't you do this? And I was like, never thought of that. Yeah. So then I kind of repackage it. Mm-hmm. Of course, try to make it look like it was my idea.
No, well, sure.
Yeah. But, you know, repackage it and get it presented. And so I'm really for listening to citizens. It doesn't mean we're going to do exactly what they say. But, you know, right. taking that into consideration, it's a big part of my decision-making process.
Absolutely. All right. You ready to get into some of the issues?
Sure. Yeah.
All right. Sounds good. Let's start with water. that seems like a very, well, wow, that's a boring issue. Yeah. But it's not in the city of Beloit and in this community, in this area. The water quality has not been good for quite some time. Can you update us on where all of that stands?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, the you know, it's a fluid situation, obviously.
Literally,
yeah, no pun intended. And really, I look at it two parts. You know, it's kind of an existing water issue, and then there's kind of the maybe the future. And it's kind of funny. I was cleaning out some of the desk drawers in my office, and there's old water testing reports from 10 years ago mm-hmm. and before. So I know this has been a huge issue in the community for a long time.
Yeah.
But I think when I have an issue or an issue in front of me or a problem in front of me, it's something that I really take a hold of and I want to get it accomplished. So I think this is, and the council, I believe, is in the same view on this. And so I guess to tackle the existing issue, you know, I know that over the years we've had a taste and odor issue at times, and obviously our water sources, that is the river, and that water source probably isn't going to improve.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to continue to have issues and maybe get worse as time goes on. And so I think we brought in an engineer a couple of years ago to solve the water, taste and odor issue, and I think we've made some strides in that. It seems to have been improved from what I've heard, again, anecdotally over the last couple
sure.
of years. But the issue is that in doing that, we kind of changed some of the pre-oxygenators, and et cetera, on the front end of the treatment process, that on the back end, the chlorine interacts with the organics and causes this TTHM that we have to keep sending letters out.
Yes.
So here's the level, and KDHE wants the EPA, and we're right above it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so typically we're always bouncing right around it, but we'd usually average to be just below it. So
mm-hmm.
it's something we've always fought, but now obviously it's kind of in the forefront.
Mm-hmm.
So we do have, we've gone through a process the last couple of years, you know, before I got here, of basically doing a benchmark to understand how do we need to treat the water, and then from that, you're able to do some calculations to figure out where can we make the chlorine contact those organics and how short we can do it so that we have less TTHM byproduct, which is the bad stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So now that I'm here, we've renewed that focus, really worked to make that presentation and those calculations as accurate as possible in the format they want so that we can submit that to KDHE and actually get it approved to change that treatment process. So hopefully here, the next couple of weeks, that'll get submitted, and for the final time this time, and actually be accurate and approvable by KDHE, and we could be then no longer having this TTHM issue.
Okay,
but that doesn't necessarily solve what's going on historically and going on in the future. Kind of like we went back to the original premise that water probably the source isn't going to improve.
Right.
So currently, you know, on the existing facility, we're getting a 4,000. Parts per million billion. I'm sorry, I can't remember exactly, but it's a high turbidity number. So let's just remember that number, 4,000.
Okay.
It's huge. That can be at a high point, big rainstorm, whatever. Typically, on an average, it's 40 to 50 parts. Okay, 40, which is still pretty. I mean, the first part's like thin mud or chocolate milk. The second part's, you know, pretty dirty. I mean, it's think of the river. So we're able to clean that. We put in a pre-sedimentation building several years ago, clean that, and the end product's coming out at a 0.15 to 0.2 turbidity. The KDHE max is 0.3, so we're just below that, but it's still fairly, you know, anecdotally, again, I hear people talking, hey, my filtration system in my house, I changed it, and there's quite a bit of debris and dirt and mud in it. I mean, so that would bear out.
Sure.
It's clean, it meets the standard, but it's not, you know, definitely not the cleanest it could be. This new testing facility that we're doing over here at I believe, Rural Water District 2 over here at the lake, so we've engaged, again, an engineer to say, hey, build us a little miniature plant to show us the concept works.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have a three-part plant sitting there. There's a large clarifier that, through vacuum, filters the water from the lake. The water coming in from the lake's at a 7 to 9 turbidity. So remember I said our average is 40 to 50, so that's significantly less. So we're
yeah.
getting a very clean product coming in. And then once it gets through that clarifier, it goes into what they call an ultrafiltration, and this is modular. You could probably fit three of them in this room here, which is a, you know, a 10 by 12 foot
mm-hmm.
room. So these are 4 foot by 8 foot boxes, roughly, or six by two boxes, and they're very modular. So it depends on how much water you need, you stick another one in. We get a new business in town, needs more water, you stick four more in, that type of system. The product we're getting out on the end of that machine is at a 0.011. So remember, our end product currently is 0.15 to 0.2. Now we're at 0.011, which is significantly improved. And that's before it even hits the reverse osmosis. So the issue we're fighting there is, again, bromides, and that's a thing that the rural water districts are fighting coming out of the lake. Mm-hmm. But with the reverse osmosis and the ultrafiltration, we're able to defeat that and get that below. So we're producing a fantastic product at the end of this concept.
Okay.
So now it's just going to be here in a couple of weeks. We'll have a report that says, hey, here's how much it is. Here's the running costs of it. Is it worth the capital outlay and the pipe to have cheaper to treat water that's also safer, or do you do something different? You know, this is going to really, this first quarter is going to help us determine that decision.
Sure.
And then is it regional? You know, how many players can we get involved that helps with the dollars, the grants, the financing? So it's going to be exciting this first quarter.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to really have some hard data to start sharing with everybody, all the players in the area.
I know this might be a difficult question to answer, but what kind of time process are we looking at if, in fact, you guys move forward with this concept and then, of course, finding the funding for it, whether it be grants and combinations of whatever's existing in the budget, and then if there's anything involving taxes or whatever, what kind of timeline or process do you think we're looking estimate-wise?
Yeah, let's say it's a positive result. We get first quarter, we figure out, hey, you know what, we want to build this plant, we want to build it here, we want to get, you know, we get maybe all the rural water, you know, we get a significant portion of the rural players involved with this, so we got a viable project. You know, I would say between design, implementation, you know, it's probably in building, you know, 2 years probably. I mean, you know, it'll probably take the rest of the year to get it designed and get all the permits for it and the funding in place, and then, you know, maybe you're breaking ground, you know, the end of, you know, the beginning of next year into, you know, the construction season or two. So, I mean, it's a fairly significant project,
right.
But you know, again, it's always going to be that timeline. So, you know, the sooner we can start it, the sooner we can complete it. You know, if we say, hey, let's wait another year, well, then you're that many more years behind. But I'd say it's probably a 2 to 3 year project.
As of now, you don't know what the cost would be roughly.
You know, I've seen dollars, and I hate to say, because
scary. I know, that's what I think. It changes.
Yeah, so, you know, I think, you know, really soon, you know, you have me on air here in about 2 months, I would hope I could say, hey, it's going to be earmarking at about X dollars,
right.
You know, we can get some pretty, and we'll have some pretty good math, because then we'll know what the players are,
right.
What all the costs are, and I think then that'll be some good discussion then.
Okay, Jason Raby, he's the city administrator at Beloit. He's with us today on Community Matters. The electrical grid, I got to bring this up. Now, listen, I've had some fun with it, and I've joked even with our mayor about it, and one time he told me it was a squirrel, and I said, well, I'm going to create a war on squirrels, because there are a lot of people in the city of Beloit that get tired of the power outages, and I know we have good people working that probably get tired of trying to go out there in the middle of the night and trying to fix these things. It is always funny to me that when the weather's actually pretty nice is when we tend to have a problem, and then when it's blowing 60 miles an hour and snow and rain, we're good. But all kidding aside, I know, well, Thanksgiving was not a good day for the power to go out. I heard all about that. I was gone at the time, but I heard all about it. What is being done? What's our situation there? Why are we having those outages more often than probably other communities are?
Sure. Yeah, I can speak for probably since I've been here as far as what I've been able to understand. And obviously the Thanksgiving one, I don't know, I posted on Facebook yesterday, but we had a pretty major short on a wire that's, you know, probably an inch in diameter, and it's, you can see the carnage there. So sometimes, fluke things happen, and it probably was a ticking time bomb, and when everybody turned on their roaster pans and ovens all at once at about 11 o'clock on Thursday, it just said, okay, I've had enough, and boom.
I can't handle it.
Yeah, and so I think that highlights probably a bigger issue that, you know, that Ron with our electric operations has been talking about. You know, we've done quite a bit of expansion over the years, you know, to service, you know, some of the, you know, Sunflower expansion, different, you know, the different developments, et cetera. And really what he's wanting to do is kind of, hey, let's refocus on the internals and start building it, you know, rebuilding or improving from the power plant back out again. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that would help with some of those issues, you know, make sure we have the right size transformers. But more importantly, a lot of it is we run a high voltage, and I don't understand electric exactly, but I can at least give you the basics. But some of our circuits are at a fairly high voltage, which is really hard to push. It doesn't like to go a long ways, and so you'll waste a lot of electricity to push it out. So you have what they call line loss. So assume, you know, so look at it as you produce so much product, and you can only bill for so much product. So we have to produce a lot more product to get it to the end customer. So there's a lot of loss there, and that gets spread onto all of us as users. And so if we rebuild that to a lower voltage, which unfortunately is a little bit more susceptible to little animals or bugs in there, but it would be new and hopefully work better, and that's pretty common across any new electric grid, but you could push that a lot farther and be a lot more efficient with it. But I think that would help a lot of those issues. And then some of it's just, it's unfortunately, like yesterday, we were actually getting repairs done. Mm-hmm, we had a third-party contractor that, they know what they're doing. It just happened to be an arc that went over from one to the other, and it probably would have been flipped right back on if they would have known that that's what did it.
Mm-hmm.
But they, of course, did their usual line driving, and they could find it really quick. They figured, hey, there's something. It must be at the plant. So they obviously flipped it right back on, and it was a similar thing on the election day, that outage. So some of that's a little bit just when you're trying to fix it live to keep it on for everybody, sometimes those things happen. But I think in talking with Ron, it's something we need to look at, and how can we measure that and make sure, hey, are we on consistently, and are our outages short? What's the industry standards on that, and can we work our way to get there? And I think we can.
Right. Burglaries, that's been a big problem or an issue certainly in the city of Beloit, and can you give us an update on where everything stands there?
That's about a month ago, I believe, or a little before that started, and it was a string of them, and talking with the police chief and other people, it was Beloit, but there's other rural communities that kind of went on a spree, thankfully we're able to work with you guys and the other media to kind of let people know that, say, hey, can you lock your cars, put stuff away, we got this going on. And I think that was something that we learned, that the sooner we can move on that, the better for the community. But the police department has worked really hard on that. And at this point, we've had four warrants out there. Two have been served, and people, arrests have been made. And the other two, there's two more warrants for people that are suspected of being involved with this, and hopefully we'll be able to apprehend. The burglaries have trailed off, and so we basically have some pretty good ideas of who's done it. We've made some moves, and now it's just building the case so we have good prosecution material, to hopefully convict the people involved. The other great thing is we've recovered, a significant amount of property. So we've been working to identify that, get it back to the rightful owners, the stuff we can identify, working with other agencies in the area to say, hey, is your county or your people missing stuff? So there's been a lot of that going on. And so really with an active investigation like it is just, working to keep those dominoes falling. And that's kind of where we're at right now, is there's still some more dominoes to fall, but I think it'll get there. We've already made a lot of great progress, and thanks, for the community for their participation and the media, hopefully that'll get all tied off here shortly. So
I know you can't mention names, but are they local or out of towners or a combination of both?
I think it's a combination of both. Yeah. Again, not knowing everybody exactly, but I'm pretty sure it's a combination of both, and it's kind of a known quantity with that, unfortunately, so it's probably prior people have caused issues, and so that's kind of what's flared back up, and so now it's just trying to get enough proof and involvement and everything to get that stopped. So
okay, let's go to some numbers here before we let you go. The overall budget that you oversee, how much money is in the budget that you oversee?
Well, just general fund dollars, we get about $1.5 million from your property taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's part of that. Yeah.
I'm aware of that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So you researched that. That's good. That would be maybe a whole other discussion sometime.
Yeah, we won't go through that.
And then the bulk of the rest of it is all utility driven. Okay, and so looking at the, I think it was in the $12 to $13 million range. But again, a huge chunk of that is the electric utility. Obviously, that's a very expensive utility. A lot of production and high dollar items in there. So that's kind of the difference between us and even like a county government and I guess you could say school. I mean, we're all different, but a lot of a fairly small portion of our budget is actually from property taxes. As you've figured out, I'm sure is the property tax. About a fourth of it comes to the city, but then the rest of it's all going to be funded by that particular. It should be standalone. You should really look at each utility sewer. Hey, how's that? What's the revenue? What's the expenses? And obviously, we're not trying to make a profit necessarily, but we need to cover that plus being able to replace equipment, et cetera, over time. So that's kind of what each one of those is doing. So that's what makes us a little different than some other government entities.
Yeah, it's important to have some reserves or backup funds in case for a rainy day, just like is your regular everyday life. You probably shouldn't spend everything in your account.
Correct.
You should probably have some there if you can afford it as cushion.
Yeah, and the previous administrator did a great job. I think at one point we had very little dollars, especially in our electric fund, which is, again, like I said, that's the high dollar stuff. I mean, one big deal. I mean, that transformer we thought had gone out on Thanksgiving, it ended up being the line. Just that transformer, it's a big black ugly looking thing over by the ball fields, if you picture it, that's $150,000 just to replace that thing. So that can get you in a world of hurt really quick. And so we went from virtually $0 in that fund to having a very healthy balance. And it's going to help us, you know, for this redo on to redo this circuit and to fix some of these outages. You know, that's probably a $400.5 million project, but we're going to be able to fund most of that just out of that fund because we've worked hard to make sure that you know, we have enough dollars in there, not going to have to borrow it to fix that. So
okay, what any other projects or things that we should know about before we let you go?
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, as you guys have probably know, we had that East Main project coming up. We've got the guts all, what I like to call the guts of the street, figured out. You know, the water sewer pipes all in the right spots. We're moving the gas line. Well, the gas company is. Electric utilities are in their correct spots. So the contractor should be coming in after the first of the year to get that knocked out, and that should be done, you know, by late spring, very early summer. The other project that we've got going is Safe Routes to School, and I know sidewalks are another issue that people want to see improved. I'm all for active transportation, figuring out how we can walk and bike to different spots in town. And so that Safe Routes to School is going to be taking place, potentially or is designed to take place on 4th and 12th Street. So we'll actually be having an informational open house, and that'll be getting sent out to those residents that are affected here. In the this week should be getting sent out the next couple of days, in the first part of January. So that way that we can talk about it, show them what's going to happen, and it's going to be a great, I think, addition to the community and kind of starting that to where people are going to be able to get to the different schools. You know, kind of a channeling or routing to get kids and people to those different spots in the community. So that'll be a pretty significant project. If you look at 4th and 12th Street, I mean, those are pretty long stretches of road to have sidewalk on, especially 12th. The other thing that we're really working on is obviously this pilot test with the water. I think that'll be a big upcoming project. Also figuring out how can we move those North Campus lots. You know, that's kind of a burden on the city. You know, how can we move those, or what's the best strategy for that? So, you know, working on that. I think as far as upcoming street projects, I know I've had the street department looking at, you know, like Court Street right through there downtown. Those are pretty, probably some of the worst shaped streets in the community. And that's something that internally we can probably knock out. And then obviously, you know, the mayor and the council have been wanting us to look at West Main, going out of town the other way. And then also, I believe it's Walnut Street, you know, kind of the curves there by the ball, the football field, and then up. That's obviously gotten really beat up from the K-14 project. And, you know, if the KDOT gets their budget in order and the state gets their budget in order, we may see some more geometric improvement on K-14. As you know, we've got the drainage part fixed. That's a huge component of it, but there's still strips of road where it's fairly narrow and ditches. And so there could be more there. But yeah, we're really looking at a lot of things. And then everything else is really from a financial perspective of how can we be more efficient, you know, with tax dollars and run the city more efficiently. And so that's kind of where I'm just observing and just really looking at the number side of it to figure out what's the best strategy for us going forward.
You know, the one thing I've talked with some people about, because there are people that get upset whatever taxes is, whether it's sales tax, property tax, whatever the case may be. And there are a lot of people that talk and complain and whine about it, but then you need to really honestly need to go ask questions and gather information, because I think knowledge is power. And so I think one of the things that people can do, and I think there's this misnomer out there that you guys don't want to hear those things, and I think that's totally inaccurate. I think you'd agree with me on that. You want feedback. Just tweet in a responsible, delightful way. Maybe not delightful, but don't have to be coming screaming at people, but just present that. Or if you want to be there for the budget hearings and everything else, some people maybe aren't aware that you can appeal this, protest this, or you may be able to have feedback or suggestions. Let people know how they can be active, because I think that's a lost art for some people. I've talked to some older people that have been in the business one side or the other with city government, and they said it used to be that people would question things, not that they were trying to be jerks about it, but they would question things to make everybody accountable. But now it's more, let's whine about it, but then when it comes to actually doing this or doing that, then nobody does it.
I think you're down the right track there, and I welcome that. Like, even our discussion today, I like to talk the numbers. I really try to know it and understand it and be prepared, because, you know, I want people to be confident that I, especially as time goes on, that I'll know more and more about what's going on with the community and with their dollars. And I think that it's a two-way street. You know, can they get involved? Can they ask questions at any time? Come talk to me. We'll figure out. If I don't know, I'll find the answer and get it back. I've already proven that to several people. And so I think I love it when people, the more they know, the better it is. And that's part of my responsibility that I'm going to be tackling is how can we as a city government be more transparent mm-hmm. as well? And whether it's producing, you know, a real simple, you know, like e-newsletter, a piece that goes on Facebook every month, you know, that's what we did in my previous community, is just letting people know, hey, we're spending dollars and here's where we're going at, you know, because I'm fully confident you show it to a council meeting, you know, you're going to see where those dollars are going. And a lot of times it'll make sense, sure. you know? And so that's the goal is, you know, if people understand where their taxes are going to and what's being done, you know, hopefully, especially going forward, then that'll answer their questions. And also, you know, at least they may not be fully on board, but they'll understand it, kind of like you're saying. They'll have right. they'll have that knowledge to at least be informed. And that's always I enjoy that. I enjoy talking to people about it, whether they agree with me or not, and making sure that people know, hey, here's what we're battling, here's what we're up against, here's how much the costs are, and that's really my method of operation, and I hope to really continue to start that really here in the city, and so the people are in the loop. I'm excited about that.
Yeah, well, that's something that we can do more often with
yeah,
you.
Yeah, exactly. Willing, oh, you know? For sure. Yeah that's I love it. Updated. Yep. Yeah, yep.
That'd
exactly.
Be terrific. You're an Iowa Hawkeye fan, is that right?
Yep.
Okay. But you had so much faith in your Hawkeyes, you didn't go see the Iowa-Michigan game.
No, I did. Yeah. Oh, man, I can't believe you brought that up. I was actually in Iowa that day because we were moving still.
You have little faith.
I know it. And I even had tickets. Somebody's like, hey, I got a ticket for tonight. You want to go? And I was like, you know, I don't want to go and see them get blown out. Of course, that was an amazing game. So that's the way it goes. I guess maybe it's a good thing I didn't show up.
Yeah, so. Maybe so. Maybe maybe the luck was because you weren't there. Right?
Yeah, that's
because
right.
Because we have that power.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. I was fanning from from my living room.
Absolutely. So. Hey, man, it was good to meet you.
Yeah, you too.
And when does the official, when do you change your business cards from city administrator to city manager? When does that
officially? I've already got them printed. No, okay. I'm just kidding. hopefully... We're working on it. It's just going to be all through a charter ordinance. Okay, so Katie, our city attorney, has drawn that up, at least for an initial glance. My job description, we actually talked about that last night. And then she'll put that all into the charter ordinance, which will also dictate what the wards will be and the voting cycles to get us to that six-member council. So I would hope, we're hoping, our goal is to have that all approved by the second meeting in January. Mm-hmm. So that way, there's a 60-day period where you could potentially say, hey, we want to do a petition and have a referendum to change this, even though we just voted to approve it. Right. But, you know, that's part of the law.
Sure.
So that gets that 60-day window to be out of there. And so hopefully then that'll all be cleared up by, you know, the first part of April so that people have time to decide if they want to run for – I mean, there's already – you know, I think you have to have it in sometime in June to put your hat in the ring to run for a seat. So that'll be – that's kind of our goal, is to get this wrapped up as quick as possible so that – people can make a good informed decision of whether they want to run for a seat or not.
Right.
So
sounds good, man. Hey, we appreciate you taking time to join us today. It was informational, educational, which is good.
Yep.
And Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, you and your family, and welcome to Beloit.
Yeah, thank you so much, Wade. Have a great Christmas, and we'll hopefully talk soon.
Sounds good. Jason Rabe, the city administrator and soon-to-be city manager, City of Beloit, our guest today on Community Matters, brought to you by the First National Bank of Beloit, Mitchell County Hospital Health Systems.